Injury to one is an injury to all, and that weakens us as a labor force. So I guess my question I want to know is members' money going to the right place? Do we need to form another labor party that really listens to the workers and is able to more provide what we need?
And Joe, what would that be? What would you need?
I guess it's not going to be a war economy, because I feel Democrats, the party that education faces, is more, in a sense, both parties are based on war economy, and we need to change that.
On that note, Joe Herman, I want to thank you very much for joining us on Politics or Pedagogy.
Thank you, John. Always a pleasure.
Likewise.
This is John Crumshaw for KPFK with a special Politics or Pedagogy Education Report. Please make your contribution at 818-985-5735 or pledge online at kpfk.org. Support KPFK so that your kids' grandkids or someone else's great-grandkids can listen when they grow up. Do it for them. Pledge today. Dial 818-985-5735 or pledge online at kpfk.org. Support KPFK today. Radio for the future. The truth is that I haven't shook my
shadow. Yo, what's up, everybody? This is Will Dog from Ozo Motley. You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara.
Good afternoon and welcome to Middle East in Focus. I'm Negwa Ibrahim. Israel has seized territory in Syrian-controlled areas of the Golan Heights as its military warned Syrians living in five villages close to the Israeli-occupied portion of the strategic area to stay home. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said he ordered Israeli forces to grab a buffer zone in the Golan Heights established by a 1974 ceasefire agreement with Syria after a lightning advance by Syrian opposition forces ended Bashar al-Assad's rule. Netanyahu said on Sunday that the decades-old agreement had collapsed and that Syrian soldiers had abandoned their positions, claiming the Israeli takeover was necessary. Now, Israel captured a portion of the Golan Heights in the 1967 war and annexed it. And the international community, except for the United States, views it as illegally occupied Syrian territory. Speaking from the Lebanese-Syrian border, Al Jazeera's Zain Basravi said that Israel was taking advantage of al-Assad's fall. Israel has repeatedly bombed Syria throughout the country's civil war. In fact, since October 7th, 2023, Israel has conducted more than 17,000 attacks in five countries, including the occupied Palestinian territory, Lebanon, Syria, Yemen, and Iran, according to the analyzed data from the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project. And since October 7th, Israel has been able to wage a genocidal war on Gaza. As journalist and writer Derek Seidman writes, quote, Israel's war on Gaza, marked by extensive war crimes and widely seen as an ongoing genocide, has been backed by the U.S. government, which has provided Israel with billions of dollars in weapons to be used against Palestinians. On the ground and from the air, the genocidal siege has been carried out by Israel's military, the Israeli Defense Forces, whose soldiers regularly post videos and images on social media of them destroying Palestinian neighborhoods, looting Palestinian homes, and abusing Palestinian prisoners. End quote. Journalist Derek Seidman goes on to quote Haim Breshith, author of The Wide-Ranging History of the Israeli Military, an Army Like No Other, How the Israel Defense Force Made a Nation. He quotes him, and Haim states, quote, The main and sometimes only machinery of repressing, killing, genociding, and ethnically cleansing Palestinians is the IDF. This is an illegal, immoral army, end quote. In the U.S., in addition to the U.S. government, Derek Seidman writes that there's one group that has long worked to mobilize ironclad support for the Israeli military. And that nonprofit group is the Friends of the Israel Defense Forces, FIDF. A lot of people don't know about this nonprofit. So with us today to talk about the U.S. nonprofit Friends of the Israel Defense Force and their ironclad financial and ideological support of the Israeli Defense Force and the IDF's war crimes and genocide being committed is our guest, Derek Seidman. Derek Seidman is a writer and researcher focused on corporate power, labor, militarism, and climate. He's a regular contributor to Truth Out and to the corporate watchdog group Little Sis, of which he's also the former research director. Seidman has also written for Jacobin, In These Times, and many other outlets. He lives in Buffalo, New York, and we are so grateful that you can join us, Mr. Seidman, today.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, great.
So, Derek, can you start us off by first explaining, like I said in my intro, I think a lot of people don't know about this nonprofit, the Friends of the Israel Defense Forces, and their role really in supporting the genocide that we're seeing against Palestinians. Can you first explain to us the mission and vision of the nonprofit, Friends of the Israeli Defense Forces, also known as FIDF?
Yeah, sure. So, the Friends of the IDF is a 501c3 nonprofit in the U.S. And it exists in large part to financially support IDF soldiers through different programs. It's been around for a little over four decades. It was founded in 1981. If you look at their website, they're pretty open about their purpose. And I'm quoting it here. It says it's to champion the soldiers of the IDF and care for their needs as they protect the state of Israel, democratic values, and Western civilization. That's what they say. It also, I should say, describes itself as the single organization authorized to collect charitable donations on behalf of the soldiers of the IDF across the United States. It's also kind of confusing because on the one hand, the group says it calls itself a, quote, non-political, non-military organization. But at the same time, it describes itself as, quote, the official U.S. partner of Israeli soldiers. What does the group actually do? As I try to explain in my Truth article, it effectively subsidizes the Israeli military through programs that annually send tens of millions of dollars to do things like pay for stipends for Israeli troops, cover personal travel costs for Israeli troops, pay for construction of troop housing and amenities, things like that. But that's the material aspect. But I also think it's important to note that there's an ideological aspect here, right? Like there's ideological work that it's doing. I think that the Friends of the IDF exists to cultivate and sustain a connection between American Jews in particular and the IDF, right? I mean, Israel, of course, gets billions of dollars in aid from the United States, and it doesn't necessarily need the money, though, of course, it helps. But I think that the deeper impact of the Friends of the IDF is sort of this project of securing allegiance and personal connection between many American Jews and the IDF through fundraising and connecting donors with IDF troops through their various programs. The last thing I'll say is that it really is a major operation. They have 60 board members. It's a huge fundraising operation. So, for example, from 2018 to 2022, the Friends of the IDF received $450 million in gifts, grants, contributions, membership fees. In the several weeks after October 7th, it raised over $50 million. And it often raises these funds through these like lavish galas that feature prominent Israeli leaders, that feature American Hollywood celebrities and singers and things like that. So I guess like in sum, I'd just say, you know, it's a big money nonprofit operation that is aimed at effectively subsidizing aspects of the Israeli army and trying to cement a tight bond between American Jews and other American supporters of Israel and the IDF.
So, you know, I appreciate the point that you're making about, you know, not only is it financially contributing to the sustainability of the IDF, but that it also importantly is having an ideological impact as well. And one of the individuals that you quote in your piece, and you also write a separate article about, is Chaim Breshith, who's the son of Holocaust survivors and founder of the Jewish Network for Palestine and also author, as I mentioned in the intro. And he talks a lot about this, about how really, you know, FIDF is really about solidifying a very dangerous ideology. Before we get into even more details around that, can you tell us a little bit about who Chaim Breshith is and the dangers he feels FIDF really poses?
Yeah, sure. So, Chaim Breshith is a compelling figure. He's a Jewish Israeli who lives in the UK. He's a historian, filmmaker, photographer. He actually recently retired from SOAS, the university in London. And as you mentioned, he's the son of Holocaust survivors. His parents both survived Auschwitz and had really harrowing experiences that he's written about and that I've interviewed him about. He's close to 80 years old now. And in the 60s and 70s, he was a second lieutenant in the IDF. And he told me that this is what really turned him into an anti-Zionist, the experiences he went through in that and sort of the realizations he had. He went to the UK in the 1970s and never really looked back, though he's been back to visit and live periods of time. But he became part of this sort of small cluster of anti-Zionist Jews, including many Israelis, anti-Zionist Israelis in London. And he founded this group, the Jewish Network for Palestine, and has been part of other Jewish anti-Zionist groups. He actually, you know, co-authored, I don't know, if, you know, for kids, you know, people that grew up in the 1990s or 2000s, you might remember those four beginners books, comic books about like philosophy and things like that. And he co-authored the Holocaust for Beginners. So he's really kind of connected to this history. Anyways, you know, I spoke to him about the story about the Friends of the IDF because he's the author of, you know, if you haven't read it, the book that you mentioned, An Army Like No Other. It's a really sweeping, copious history of the IDF, a really, really important book. His central argument in the book is that the Israeli military is really at the core of Israeli national identity, that the Israeli army is sort of like the vehicle through which Israeli identity was and continues to be historically constructed, that it sort of holds Israeli national identity together. He told me that he said, quote, it's the organization that dictates identity in Israel. Since this is the army that's carrying out Israel's project of dispossession and apartheid and occupation and now clearly genocide, Breshith argues that it's not a moral army. It's an immoral army. He said the main and sometimes only machinery of repressing, killing, genociding, and ethnically cleansing Palestinians, as you quoted. So I wanted to interview him for this story because I wanted to give readers a sense of what it was that the FIDF was supporting and what the ideological significance was of cultivating this deep connection among American Jews to the IDF. And I should also say, just as a side point, that Breshith was, he was actually arrested in the UK at the beginning of last month under the UK Terrorism Act, on really absurd charges, for just speaking at a protest in front of the UK Israeli ambassador, in London, and her residence. He went through a sort of harrowing night in prison. You know, he's 79 years old, has cancer. And I did an interview with him about that, too. So it was good to talk to him for this story.
And actually, just on that note, how long was he detained for? How long was he in custody for?
It was just overnight. They you know, it's sort of a long, the ordeal was kind of, it was kind of a wild ordeal that he describes in the interview I did with them that would be too long to describe here. But they kept him overnight, ended up letting him go, and then essentially dropping the charges.
And, you know, I just want to stay on Brashith for a second here, because I think that it's really, really important that he, as someone who himself has served within the Israeli military, is himself Israeli, really has dedicated his life to anti-Zionism. Can you maybe give some insight on some of the things he has said about the real dangers of Zionism, both to Jewish communities around the world as well as to the globe? In general, to all communities.
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the things that he told me is that, I mean, he has many things to say about that, but one of the things that he told me is that he thinks that Zionism has essentially become, like, replaced, you know, for among American Jews and other Jews worldwide, that Zionism has essentially replaced Judaism as their religion. And he, you know, really laments, you know, what he says is sort of the replacing of this, you know, settler colonialist ideology with, you know, a more humanist Jewish tradition that he really looks fondly upon. And, you know, in the book, he goes he really goes into, you know, the extent to which, Zionism has, been something that he refers to it as colonizing the minds of governments in the West. Something that is an ideology that has really, distorted caused a lot of damage all over the world.
This is Middle East in Focus, and we are talking today about the U.S. nonprofit Friends of the Israel Defense Force, FIDF, and their ironclad financial and ideological support of the Israeli Defense Forces and the IDF's war crimes and genocide being committed, with our guest, Derek Seidman, who is a writer and researcher focused on corporate power, labor, militarism, and climate. He's a regular contributor to Truth Out and to the corporate watchdog group, Little Sis, which he was also the former research director for. So now going back to FIDF, the Friends of the Israel Defense Force, a U.S. nonprofit, something you talk about in your article is that quote, ideologically, the FIDF projects extreme Zionist views, end quote. Can you elaborate on this and how the FIDF promotes and implements these extreme Zionist views that, as Brashith says, is really this this settler colonialist ideology that is incredibly dangerous to Jewish communities across the globe, as well as to all communities across the globe, because it's a settler colonialist ideology?
Yeah, I think that you see this in some of its sort of public relations and in social media, and also, you know, who it affiliates itself with. For example, you know, it regularly uses maps that puts out in social media posts, it has on T-shirts that it sells, that depict Israeli borders from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea, include Gaza, include the Golan Heights, which is, you know, kind of ironic since, you know, the criticism is always against pro-Palestinian protesters chanting from the river to the sea. But this is what they have on their, the stuff that they put out. They've done things like, they have done trolling reposts of images of a Representative Rashida Tlaib. So you might remember that when Netanyahu spoke to Congress, she held up a sign that said war criminal. I think that's what it said. And they made a meme of her that said, had that sign and said, you know, donate to the FIDF, Friends of the IDF. So really kind of cruel things like that. This is someone who's obviously suffering, a lot from what's happening in Gaza. Earlier this year, they drew a lot of scrutiny for inviting donors to a talk by the Israeli military intelligence veteran, Eliyahu Yossayan. I may be butchering the name, but who is really notorious for just, you know, saying, using really genocidal language. You know, he said that there's no innocence in Gaza, that Israel should attack Gaza with the aim of revenge, zero morality, maximum corpses. He said there's no population in Gaza. There are 2.5 million terrorists. So, you know, this is the kind of ideology they project, and these are the kinds of people that they associate with.
And you know, to further elaborate on this, in addition to promoting this very dangerous, violent, genocidal ideology, they're also actually making sure to financially support it. And so I do want to get into some of the ways that they actually do financially support the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces. Now, one of the things you talk about in your article, and again, I'm just going to quote directly, you say that the I'm going to quote you directly, that's quoting them. Okay, so you say that the FIDF states, quote, you state, quote, FIDF calls itself a non-political, non-military organization, but that it also describes itself as, quote, the official U.S. partner of Israel's soldiers. So can you now get into some of the specific ways, despite claiming to be a non-military organization, that the FIDF's programs and fundings actually goes to directly supporting the IDF?
Yeah, you know, I'll give you a few examples of its programs that I talk about in the article. So one thing that donors can do is they have these programs, adopt a battalion or adopt a brigade. And these are programs that fund things like financial grants for IDF soldiers, you know, costs of flights, holiday vouchers, events for soldiers, things like that. Things that go in toward, you know, the costs of sustaining and supporting, IDF troops. For example, you know, the Miami chapter, they have different, you know, case studies that you can find on their website and elsewhere, but the Miami chapter of the Friends of the IDF has sponsored the Golani Brigade, which is one of the sort of famous military IDF units that goes back to 1948. Has fought in all of Israel, the wars that Israel's fought in. It's the brigade that Haim Brashith was part of in the 60s and 70s. So, you know, millions annually go into this program. And again, like, I think I want to stress that I think the significance here, you know, it's not just the material assistance, right? It's the ideological wedding that this does between U.S. donors and the IDF. You know, you can support this battalion, right? That's that, right? There's another one of their really sort of, you know, celebrated programs revolves around lone soldiers, right? It's the lone soldiers program. Lone soldiers are IDF troops with no family in Israel. They're often, you know, foreign-born recruits. So this program provides thousands of these lone soldiers, foreign-born recruits to the IDF with cash gifts, holiday vouchers, housing, flights home, recreational activities, you know, things like that. And, you know, as you might know, going to join the IDF or, you know, a lot of times people, go on, you know, sponsored trips to Israel, and they learn about lone soldiers, and then they go and, you know, join the IDF. You know, it's sort of sometimes a rite of passage for non-Israeli Jews who want to become Israeli or sort of show their dedication to the cause. So the lone soldiers is sort of a deeply kind of ideological concept and program, right? I guess one other example I'll give is that the Friends of the IDF also finances construction projects for Israeli troops. So they've, you know, built things, and this is just, you know, coming from their website, right? They've built things like sports centers, culture halls, synagogues, memorial rooms, swimming pools, sports facilities, soldiers' homes. These projects are sometimes backed by big billionaire donations, right? That are specifically earmarked for projects like this. So, for example, right now they're finishing up a building project that's going to house 222 of Israel's lone soldiers. And this housing project is named after and presumably financed by, therefore, the family of entertainment billionaire Haim Sabin. that who donates a lot of money to the IDF.
So I want to get now actually into some of the specific folks that you mentioned in your piece that are big donors of FIDF, as well as some of the A-list celebrities, if you know them. Can you maybe just give us some background on some of those biggest billionaire donors, some of the corporate donors to FIDF, and some of the A-list celebrities that show up to their galas and events?
Yeah, I haven't followed the celebrities too much, but, you know, people like Pharrell Williams and Barbara Streisand, Andy Garcia. I think there was a Real Housewife of New Jersey, some real big name people that they pull out to the galas. And, you know, which I think does important PR work for them. But the thing that I was more interested in was the donors. And definitely they have, there's, you know, some of the, you know, wealthiest people in the world are big donors to the Friends of the IDF. So a few examples I can give you are, I mentioned Chaim Sabin, but, you know, he's, you know, during most of its existence has been one of their biggest donors. He's donated tens of millions of dollars to the Friends of the IDF. He sits on their board. He has chaired their events. You know, he's made billions of dollars from the entertainment industry and, you know, other businesses that he's invested in. He's a big backer of the Friends of the IDF. Jan Koum, who is, one of the co-founder of WhatsApp, has donated, I calculated $6.8 million, looking at tax records, $6.8 million to the Friends of the IDF from 2008 to 2022. Paul Singer, if you haven't heard of him, he's the billionaire founder of Elliott Management, which is one of the world's very biggest hedge funds. He's given nearly $2 million to the Friends of the IDF. Another Los Angeles person, Casey Wasserman, who's sort of like the, you know, been the power broker around the 2028 Olympics, is he's donated a little over $500,000 to the Friends of the IDF several years ago to an outdoor athletic center. One of the biggest backers, actually, he just passed away about a month ago. His name was Bernie Marcus. He was the co-founder of Home Depot, you know, mega billionaire who donated to all kinds of conservative causes. He gave around $13 million to the Friends of the IDF from 2009 to 2022, and with millions particularly earmarked for the Lone Soldier program. So, you know, we could keep going on, you know, the Adelsons, the casino magnates, you know, late Sheldon Adelson and now his wife, Miriam Adelson, who's going to be, I think, influential in the Trump administration. Larry Ellison, the co-founder and chairman of Oracle, has been a big donor. He's worth over $200 billion, one of the wealthiest persons in the world. The last thing I'll say is also that a lot of corporations offer matching gifts of for employees that want to donate to the Friends of the IDF, anywhere between $1,000 and $15,000. So there's a whole range of corporations, you know, ranging from, you know, Apple to Starbucks to BlackRock, and the list could go on.
So we only have about a minute left, and I just want to remind listeners we are in Fund Drive, so please make sure to call and support us, 818-985-5735. And just to end here, so the FIDF is a nonprofit, 501c3. Technically, these donations are tax deductible. So how is this possible? And let me get more specific. Has anyone challenged the legality of the FIDF and its status as a nonprofit that is actually financially supporting the military of another country? And can you talk about other organizing efforts to challenge the existence of the FIDF and its financial support of Israel's apartheid violence and genocide against Palestinians?
You know, I don't know if there's been any type of legal challenges or anything like that. I do know that there's been protests, you know, so for example, the journalist Sophie Hurwitz reported on, it must have been about a year ago now, an effort to disrupt a Friends of the IDF fundraiser in New York. There was protests in Bay Area at one of their galas. So there's been protests around them. And The Intercept also reported on, there was a group of Apple Apple shareholders and former and current employees who wrote an open letter demanding that the company stop doing its matching donations program to groups that included the Friends of the IDF. But, you know, there's been successful efforts, you know, in places like Canada. Activists succeeded in revoking the charitable status of the Jewish National Fund of Canada over its support for illegal expansion of Israeli settlements in the West Bank. You know, in New York,